Welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. Before I start the interview, if you enjoy this conversation or the others in the archives, please go to iTunes, your favorite podcast site, and leave a review. You'll be directly responsible for the growth of this show. Now then, on with the interview. Hello everyone, tonight we are speaking with Susan Norris and Nathan Spivey from Transition Harrisburg. I wanted to talk with them a bit about the transition movement because it is permaculture in action for community building, and both of them have been very active in my home area with getting transition going and doing a lot of great on-the-ground work. And for all of those folks of you who are around the world looking to use permaculture to build community, transition is a great thing to look into. The work by Rob Hopkins is good material to look at for this kind of work. So, Susan, Nathan, how are you doing?
Doing great.
Doing good. Thanks, Scott.
Good. Thanks for taking the time for joining me and all of my listeners tonight. I want to begin with by asking you, how did you find out about transition and what brought you into it? And then if you could also talk about where you got your transition training and what that experience was like.
Well, I found out about transition in the spring of 2009. My friend Cassavon Kundra, who now lives in Virginia, got a bunch of us together to do a series called Living Sustainably at the Unitarian Church of Harrisburg. It was a 5-week series where we would get together every Wednesday night with a group of people and just talk about the issues facing us, climate change and things like that. And one of the attendees was Haas Toby, and he would stand up every night or every Wednesday night and hold up this book, the Transition Handbook, and say, "You guys have to read this book. You guys have to read this book." So after our 5-week series was over, we decided to continue meeting weekly. And we would meet once a month at Toby's place in, where was that? Lancaster.
Yeah, down near Lancaster near,
we can't think of the name right now, but we would meet at his place, and he is the one, Haas was the one who reserved 7 spots for us in the transition training at Genesis Farm in New Jersey. He says, "Okay, who's going to go?" And so he kind of bullied all 7 of us into signing up and going down and getting trained. So that's how I got involved with it.
And I got involved with it, I would say the latter part of 2009, I was talking to Susan about various things, and she was mentioning to me people that she knew, such as Casa and Haas and others that were trying to make some sort of difference in the arena of community building and community's sustainability. And after she took her training, then we talked more, and I got more interested in it, and seeing the work that she was trying to do, and then got training myself at Genesis Farm. And I think my training at Genesis Farm was similar, but then also slightly different than that what Susan went through. So I let her talk with you about what she went through first there as training, then I can share what I went through.
Okay. So my training was with Michael Brownlee and Lynette Marie Hanthorn of Transition Boulder, which is now Transition Colorado. And it was basically, what is climate change? What is economic instability? And things like that. So a lot of that I had already learned previously in the 5-week course, the Living Sustainably course that CASA had done. But towards the end, the 7 of us that came from the Harrisburg area realized that transition is basically an open-ended program where you just do what you need to do in order to get your community to live sustainably and within the limits of Earth's natural systems. And we all kind of looked at it ourselves, or we sat around the campfire that night and decided that what we really needed to do when we got back to Harrisburg was to do disaster planning, because we really don't have a lot of time to make the changes we need to change. So that's basically what we came back with, and we've been trying to do that ever since.
I would say that when I went through training, it was to really get a good sense of what transition was all about. Because I know that when Susan got back and she was talking with various people in the Harrisburg area about transition and doing presentations, and then eventually connecting with you and you and she trying to make efforts there, inroads, that I needed to be able to contribute in some meaningful way. And my training was also at the Genesis Farm in New Jersey with Lynette and Michael. We had a lot of focus in the beginning also on a lot of the need for spirituality in our efforts of doing transition. And then it got into the practicalities of how do you create a transition movement in your area, what some of the difficulties are, what the answers to those difficulties are. And we had a number of people from other transition towns come in one evening, it was Saturday evening, to talk with us about things that they had been doing and some of the successes that they had and difficulties that they were experiencing. I think that helped a lot with us being able to have a sense of what we should be doing to try to create the transition concept as a means of understanding about community sustainability. I think that what we have come to understand is that transition is not so much what a lot of transitioners are trying to create, which is a actual thing, a entity of some sort, like a transition organization, community type thing, as much as it is something where you educate people about what sustainability is and why sustainability is important. Whether it's about the fact of being involved with global warming efforts or just trying to make sure that people have some sort of skill available to make a transition from unemployment to employment, to being able to just save money by feeding yourself. So that's been a large focus for us, is to get a lot of people engaged in just thinking about why transition is important so that they can begin to operate from that mindset in their daily lives.
So you see transition as being more about daily preparation for regular living through education than necessarily like joining another group or becoming part of another organization?
Well, it's a little bit of both for me, because transition, there aren't a lot of people in Transition Harrisburg right now. So what I do, and Nathan and a couple of my friends do, is go out and give talks on the concept of transition and how to apply it in their lives and in their community. And to that end, Transition Harrisburg has joined up with Green Cause, which is Paul Garrett's group, a local group that was started out with high school and grade school kids, and then he formed an adult group, Mechanicsburg Area Environmental Group, and the umbrella organization for that is Green Cause, and he is working to pull groups like Transition and maybe other big groups like Sierra Club into it so that we're all working towards the same goal. So that's how I'm approaching it.
And I think that that's part of the idea of Transition Town. The thing that makes it an entity and an organization of sorts is when people operate from a transition mindset and they're involved in a particular trade or skill or action of some sort. They work with other people that are involved in that same sort of trade or skill or action to form a working group. And the more working groups you have coordinated in the local area where you live, the more that begins to give the appearance of having a transition town entity operating. The fact is that a lot of the people within the area, say like Harrisburg, 49,000 people, to begin to engage in the transition mindset, there's transportation, there's education processes and entities already in existence. And people are not necessarily looking to join another organization as much as they're looking to be able to find solutions to whatever dilemmas or lifestyle, quality of lifestyle changes they're looking to make. And being able to have them understand that transition offers them the opportunity to engage with others, to create a working group, to be able to support the function of the Harrisburg area, the more people you have in Harrisburg doing that, the more you can say you have a transition Harrisburg. But we're not looking to create an organization entity of per se that is transition Harrisburg, because Harrisburg already exists. So that becomes the catch, in a sense, between educating people and then seeing something manifest that says, yes, transition is actually working. And it's in its infancy here in Harrisburg, even though it's been a couple of years, there's a lot of people that know about transition that didn't know about it 2 years ago or a year ago or 6 months ago that do see the value in it, but they're just operating in their own individual world with doing it, and they're not necessarily connecting to a collective yet. But that's still part of it, is to bring organizations like Ngozi Eco Village that we're partnered with for the training of inner city youth and community people there, as well as the Mechanicsburg Area Environmental Club and Green Cause.
There's
the Innovate Coalition for the Environment that understands and works with Transition Town, and we work with them. So it's a growing process. And unfortunately, sometimes what happens for a lot of people who get involved with Transition Town is they realize there's a strong, strong indication that time is short as far as how stable our economy is going to remain, or how much we can continue to operate using fossil fuels due to their high impact on the environment, all of those kinds of things, as well as trying to make changes so that people do not feel the need to cooperate with the idea that the only way they can get jobs is through major corporations that are doing harm in the fossil fuel industries or any other kinds of industries. So the transition process is sometimes an urgent one that creates some anxiety within transitioners, because we want people to get it and to start working with something, and then we can only move as fast as people allow us to move to make sustainability.
With that thought of a long timeline for some individuals' mindset, but the short time frame because of the issues that are at hand, do you find that educating people that they can make a difference in the short term is a critical challenge that you face in light of their day-to-day challenges? Of if someone's sitting there going, I need to put food on my plate for the next week, you know, and then looking at transition, how do you kind of look at those challenges and work within that framework of the society that people are currently shackled by, either by mindset or their socioeconomic issues, or even just someone who's taking a lot of time because they're living in one place and commuting to another, and they say, well, I don't have time to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big problem trying to get people to think long-term while they're dealing with short-term problems, like how am I going to pay my bills next week, or how am I going to put food on the table? Mm-hmm. So one of the ways that we're dealing with that is to work with groups like Ngozi Eco Village at the Boys and Girls Club, mm-hmm, on Barry Hill Street in Harrisburg. And we're teaching teenage girls or even grade school girls and boys how to garden. And in fact, we have 8 or 9 apple trees and 6 or 8 raised bed gardens right there at the Boys and Girls Club. And we're teaching them, we're teaching the children a couple of days a week how to garden. And they will be taking that information back to their parents. And some of the parents come from time to time to see what we're doing. So that's one of the things that we're focusing on, is getting people to grow their own food. A couple of weeks ago, I taught a workshop, a 3-hour workshop on container gardening, sponsored by the Manada Conservancy. And we had about 25 people there, mostly women and their children. And they all went home with at least one container and at least one tomato plant and a pepper plant and maybe some basil and oregano. So we were teaching people who don't have land how to garden in a windowsill, on a balcony, or on a porch.
And I think that what people went away with from that container workshop, as they do with many of the workshops, is the realization that some new kind of idea exists that will allow them to be able to make a difference in their lives and how they might be able to put food on the table or be able to get some work done that they need done in the community as they begin to grasp the concept of Transition Town and its cooperative effort that it stresses so highly. The sense of urgency that a lot of transitioners feel throughout the different transition groups that I have come in contact with sometimes is based on the fact that they really want to see the planet saved. And some of them want to see it saved for the sake of human beings and not see human beings as a species wiped out. Some are just a sense of urgency, not wanting to see the planet wiped out because of our own insensitivities to what it is we're doing. But myself personally, I don't want to begin to be seen like proselytizing out of a sense of urgency to save the planet. I want to see it saved. I want to see all species taken care of. I also know that the only thing that can be done is what can be done as we all move and do what we do. And one of the things that's stressed within Transition Town is that the effort should be one where people see it as something that is, in a sense, fun or at least enjoyable to the point where they're not operating from the doom and gloom mindset, but they're operating from the mindset that this is something that's just good, regardless of whether there was climate situations or economic situations or not. It's just good to be local, and it's good to be a sustainably local community in that sense. So for me, yeah, the urgency exists, but I don't want to get out and try to make people operate now. They just got to do it now because of what could happen. I think that sharing and getting people to be aware of it becomes very, very important. And a lot of people have become more aware. And so now they are available for us to talk to because they've been to the container workshop or they've been to some sort of movie that we have shown and talked about things, or they've been to some other kind of presentation that has been done, and they get it. And the other parts that we're trying to get people to understand is the ideas that the cooperative effort of sustainability can be enhanced by concepts like time banking or local currencies also, because that's very key to sustainability.
So do you see then that the transition movement as a whole, as you're both working to present it in the community, is a positive one, and that allows you to engage people more readily than being the doom preacher on the street with your clapboard saying that the end is nigh, making it fun and positive really brings people in?
Yes. Yeah, we have a lot of tools at our disposal for going through the transition training. You know, we can talk intelligently about the principles of permaculture and the ethics and apply that to whatever workshop we're teaching.
And I think that that allows for people to feel comfortable engaging in it because it's not something that they see is trying to be anti anything as much as it's just being pro self-survival, self-sustaining. And when we show more of the examples throughout the United States and England and Ireland and Scotland and other places where transition communities are doing good things and they're making great strides and people are being supported and they're growing in ways that we've lost over the last few centuries based on the idea that we need to pull ourselves individually up by our bootstraps and we don't need to trust anybody else. We've lost that sense of community that is so important. And coming back to that is not the transition as such a new idea, is trying to recapture what works best because life itself, this planet itself, it operates on the concept and the methods of cooperation. And no species operates in a vacuum or in isolation, and just brings it back to the poem of No Man is an Island. So the more we try to get people to appreciate that in themselves and in others, the more they can just feel comfortable doing it.
When it comes to taking people and that idea of that rugged individual, do you find that by presenting workshops where people can come and learn a skill that betters themselves, that you wind up bringing someone in who then winds up meeting a group of people who are like them and engages them and lets them see that there's a community like them available?
Yeah.
I think that one of the key things is that we're not trying to say to people that there's a certain, say, like social or political mindset that you have to operate from. I mean, I spoke to a guy today in a local the department store, and he was saying how he has for decades, and he's in his late 60s, done as much as he could to be as self-sustaining as possible to take care of his family by hunting and fishing and a lot of those kinds of things that have brought food to the table and helped them to survive in ways that we have lost. And a person like that, whatever the political persuasion, is not of any interest as much as it is, can he teach that skill to a group of other people, how to process a chicken or a deer or grow some corn or to fix this or whatever. And when people come in to a workshop, what we're interested in is, what do you bring to the table that can help the sustainability effort, and what do you need to learn to help the sustainability effort, and how can we build cooperative community, and how does that idea resonate with everyone? And that in itself helps people to feel comfortable in engaging in whatever transition processes and work groups that we may be trying to present.
And transition is basically apolitical, which I think is a good idea, but that doesn't mean I don't bring issues to the groups that I'm teaching. So if I'm talking about water issues with Clean Water Action, we're involved in fracking, and then I'll take that information to the people in other workshops and say, you know, your clean water is in danger because of this practice.
But in that case, you're not trying to engage the politics necessarily as much as you're trying to engage the passion of the people who you're talking to?
Right. Because if there are people in Harrisburg who are drinking polluted water, then I have to tell them why this is happening and ways that they could possibly get water other ways, like rainwater catchment and then running it through a charcoal filter or a sand filter or something like that. And so it takes them out of that fossil fuel industry loop.
I think that a good example of just talking with people about something that is common sense practicality is when I teach a Tai Chi class and people are asking me about the concept of what the Tai Chi principles called Qi. It's just a Chinese word that is meaning energy. But when you look at the character of the word Qi, it's comprised of two things, air and food. And those two things is what the Chinese are saying is the Qi, or the energy of the human species especially. So that if Tai Chi is saying to you, go outside and practice and breathe in the new and exhale the old, if you're breathing in the new outside, but the new is polluted by some action that some corporation is taking or some farmer is taking or something, then people need to be aware of that and say, well, how do I want to deal with that? How can I make a difference? How can I talk to that farmer? Or what do I need to do to help myself to be able to offset the effects of whatever it is that I'm breathing or the water that I'm drinking? Even though I live in Harrisburg and some sort of natural gas drilling may be taking place north of us, does that in any way impact the water that comes into Harrisburg? And if so, how do we allow ourselves to have that which is naturally right for us to have, which is clean water? So people get to understand those kinds of issues by how we present information in Transition Town, and then it's up to the people to decide how they want to deal with those issues. We're not trying to direct them as to how to do it, but we at least make them aware of the issues.
And by raising that awareness, then, you allow any individual who wishes to be involved with transition to make their own choices and then be responsible for themselves and the results?
Well, absolutely. But also for the individual to share with us whatever solutions they want to take, how does that impact the transition permaculture ideas of resilience? Because for a community to be sustainable, it has to be a resilient community. Therefore, there has to be connections. If an individual decides to do something on their own and it brings negative impacts back to the community and challenges the survivability and the sustainability and the resilience of that community, that individual has to talk with us about why that's important so that we understand, or we share with that individual the results of their action to be able to say, is that really what you want to do if you're trying to create sustainability?
And that then results in a group and an organization that is self-correcting to a degree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's like our organ systems and our bodies do not operate individually in any way. They're all dependent on each other. And, you know, the heart sending blood to the lungs, picking up oxygen, which then sends that out to the various cells, billions of cells in the body to be oxygenated, which picks up nutrients also from the digestion system that then supplies us with the various micronutrients that we need. And then there's the elimination system that has to take place as well. So there's no independent autonomous functioning that goes on within the human self nor within nature. And so we must be able to have a system of sustainability that allows for self-correcting and the rebalancing.
If someone wanted to take some of these ideas and begin to build community and to build a network of people who are interested in coming together to make a difference in their local needs, and as we're saying, build a self-correcting system of individuals, what are some things that you guys would recommend in order to get that started?
Well, what seems to be happening here is in Harrisburg is that we start talking about food, organic food and safe food and healthy food, and get people to start thinking about where their food comes from and how they grow it and how to prepare it.
Also, you know, they can begin to look online at the transition handbook, look online for the kinds of things that are being done in the U.S. They can look at transitionus.org. They can begin to look at Transition Harrisburg if they're local, the blog spot here, which will lead them to other resources as well, and they can begin to educate themselves. And 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 individuals can come together and say, let's talk about this handbook. Let's talk about the information we've read. Let's talk about permaculture and decide how we want to move forward on that. And they can take transition training. Susan and I did, and so are many others. They can take permaculture training. All of those kinds of things are available for them to do to get themselves started. But most importantly, to stay connected with other transition chapters throughout, because we have at least 14 throughout the state of Pennsylvania, for an example, and there's thousands throughout the world. So there's a lot of resources that they do have available to them.
Mm-hmm. Like Transition Media, York, Gettysburg, Reading, Pittsburgh State College, Philadelphia, you know, they're all over the place, and they're all doing outstanding work, especially Transition Media.
What are some of your favorite resources for educating people about the issues that you see that transition towns face moving forward, be they ecological, environmental, economic, just where folks could go and read and learn more about what's going on if they're not aware of them?
Well, there's always Rob Hopkins' book, The Transition Handbook and the Transition Companion, and his blog, transitionculture.org. Those are probably the best places to start.
There's a lot of videos on those websites of what transitions are doing worldwide and how they're doing it. Now, me, I'm a little bit more radical in a sense in how I like to present information to people, but I think the documentary, The Economics of Happiness, is a very good documentary to get people to see how going from a resilient community into the kinds of civilized modern societies that we presently deal with can make changes that are not necessarily healthy changes. And being able to get back to those resilient communities, that kind of documentary helped people to have a basis for discussion with each other to decide where they want to go, how they want to adapt and adopt in that sense. And there's a lot of information regarding the permaculture that is so important for people to understand, because that's where all of the tools and skills and mindsets focus on design and all of that is so rich that it's just so important to engage in learning about that.
What do you see as people start to get involved and begin gaining this knowledge about what's necessary for resilience, the issues at hand, learning more about transition and permaculture, as they start to implement these ideas of design and ethics and a right livelihood? What do you see as some of the biggest challenges, not only for you in Harrisburg, but also for transition movement as a the transition movement as a whole?
There seems to be people just don't have time to engage in changing their current lifestyle because they're so busy trying to make money, keeping their head above water, and not being foreclosed or losing their job. That's the problem I run into most. Is I tell people about transition and permaculture, and they say, "Ah, fabulous! Keep up the good work. I don't have time to do it, but you know, you guys keep going."
One of the main issues, as far as when people get engaged in the transition forming process, is the egos that are brought to the table, in the sense of the idea of co-leadership is so new. Some people always are thinking someone has to be in charge, and then there has to be people just below them, and then people just, we're used to that military hierarchical structure that we see so well, from the church to the military to government, all structures of corporations. And for us to have true community, that co-leadership is something that is so important to be able to get to, and it's hard for a lot of people creating transition towns to understand how to let that be, because they're enthusiastic about making the process work. They genuinely want it to work, but they feel like there's got to be someone leading it. So the egos become a problem, the time becomes a problem, and then some of it too is just, how do we really just go about doing this? Sometimes they're looking for a turnkey operation. And this is, as the word says, is transitioning from one type of paradigm to another in reality. And there's no standard operating procedure about how one transition town will do what they do compared to another transition town. And a lot of that's been worked through, but it's been a struggle in a lot of the beginning chapters throughout the world.
Are you finding that those struggles, as this movement matures, that some of those struggles are being handled? Or is it just transitioning? Is it just moving to a different kind of challenge as you go forward?
I think that the challenges, in many ways, are being resolved as people get to know each other. Because in our training, we were taught that to form the core group of people within Transition Town, one of the things that was in just highly important was that the few people get to know each other, because we don't have community where we grew up with each other in close knit and knew each other from childhood on. We have to acquaint ourselves with each other and get to know each other so that we can understand how to work together. So a lot of that, those challenges of time and ego, all of those things, yeah, they have been met as people got a chance to know each other. But more importantly, as they saw results happening, they saw gardening happening, they saw transportation issues being resolved, they saw water issues being changed, as Susan said, about rainwater capturing methodologies, or people doing other kinds of things within their municipalities. So, yeah, there's been growth in the challenges that have been there in the initial phases, but there's always the continued challenge of how do you include the newer kinds of working groups and concepts that arises that are important, like the educational system. How do you get a working group around an educational system that teaches more than what we have been teaching in the past, or teaching what we've taught in the past differently? And how do we structure that within a community for resilience and all of that? So there's always a continued challenge, and I think those challenges will go forth into the future for decades, because we're growing this into a new world model.
In mentioning moving forward through the decades and education, is working with the Boys and Girls Club and doing that extracurricular or after-hours activity, do you find that that's very productive both for the group and seeing growth and successes, as well as seeing the impact that can occur with children by teaching them something else and something more than what they learn in their day-to-day education within the school system that exists here in Pennsylvania?
Yes. I think the children really, really love working in the soil. A lot of them, including their parents, have never held a shovel before or didn't know where a tomato came from. And so we take them out there every week and say, you know, here are some raspberries. You can pick them right off the bush. And I had one girl ask me, is it dirty? And I'm like, no, you can eat it right off the bush. And just seeing the joy that they get of planting a tree or picking a tomato or eating a raspberry is just wonderful, because it gets them back in touch with nature, with the world around them. And it really opens up their eyes to not be sitting in a classroom, but to come out and to breathe the air and to figure out if we have enough time to plant that last tree before the storm comes in. It's really nice to see them just open up and look around and engage the world.
I think that the Boys and Girls Club is a micro example of what can happen when you have people operating from the transition mindset. You have the director of the Boys and Girls Club that is just fantastic and just phenomenal in, one, just willing to hear about the transition ideas and concepts and permaculture and methodology, and then to allow for an acre of property there to be able to be converted as a training, learning tool through the efforts of the Ngozi Eco Village, so that now you have young children in that environment of the Boys and Girls Club learning the kinds of things that Susan is talking about, and the director of the program and the staff of the program seeing the changes and learning what that's about. Those children can take that back to their elementary schools when the school year starts. And they're going to have that. And they're going to have small conversations with their peer groups and possibly with their teachers. And that causes some outreach to start happening, so that the teachers of the school will invite transition people in and talk about transition more. And the school itself, whether it's Melrose or whether it's Foos Elementary or any of the schools in the Harrisburg area, they can begin their own eco-village transition permaculture processes. And that is the challenge I was talking about. That it's just good challenges that will keep growing and growing until the whole school system of Harrisburg is engaged in the transition mindset, permaculture mindset.
As you see that process occurring, and you have those small successes that build up your confidence in what transition is doing, what else gives you hope about this movement moving forward?
Just the fact that it exists and it came out of the permaculture principle, it gives people a choice now. Before transition came on the scene, 5 or 6 years ago now, the only world view that people had was capitalism. But now with transition, they can see that there are different ways of living in the world that don't necessarily involve employment at a corporation or driving a fossil fuel powered car from point A to point B. They now see that you can grow your own food, or you can hire a bike taxi to go from uptown to downtown Harrisburg. you know, you can capture your own water. You can talk to your neighbors and say, well, let's rent a lot from the city of Harrisburg and grow our own food and maybe start a garden market. I see that kind of change or that kind of option is just opening worlds for people.
And I think that that's one of the major situations there, Scott, is that when people wake up in the morning and have been waking up in the morning in our culture here for the last 100 years or more, especially since the beginnings of the industrial era, they've been waking up with the idea that they have to go out and they have to focus on gaining the capital necessary to sustain their personal quality of life. And therefore, there's been a lot of anxiety, stress, and frankly, many diseases and maladies that have occurred because people are always feeling that there is a possibility for whatever reason that they might not be able to make the capital that they need in order to live their life. And we are taught that we must make that capital by buying products that are made from resources of the earth in order to grow an economic society and an economic system that people feel that say this, that economic growth can go on forever. What Transition Town is saying that people can wake up in the morning and realize that they have a community of people around them, there may be 100 and maybe 400, that are focused on creating sustainability, and everybody's effort is into helping to build a home, is into helping to capture water, is into helping to grow food, is into helping to provide those kinds of herbs or skills necessary to maintain quality of health, to educate the children, and so on. So that's a different way to wake up when you know you are in being supported by a lot of other people and you're doing something good, and it's not totally dependent on growing an economic system, but you're growing sustainability in concert with the natural order. That causes a lot of our situation to change to where we might see people, instead of somebody dying in this society one every minute from cancer, they are dying one every day until one every week to one every month. And we begin to change those things that are related to the negative effects of trying to just focus on economics, economics, economics.
Is it the Kingdom of Bhutan that has the idea of gross national happiness?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you see, as we move forward and are able to grow our own lives in a healthy, positive way and focus less on the economic and build this sense of community, that then our personal happiness and health can increase rather than living under the stresses of constantly chasing more.
Yes, because I think that what happens is this. The beauty of this is that right now in everyone's mind is that we have experience with living in caves and living in harsh times like in the pioneer days or something. And then we have in our minds also all of this opulence and ostentatiousness that comes about through all of the things we have available, from flat screen TVs and computers and all of those things. And we feel like we have a choice only between those two paradigms or models, when in fact Transition Town is saying whatever we need from modern day conveniences that we can do in a sustainable way, let's bring that along with us. Whatever we need that is from the old schools of living on the land and being an agrarian society, bring that with us and let's mesh that into a whole new system of living that allows people to be healthy and resilient. And there's nothing but good that can come out of that.
I look at all the ground that we've covered tonight, looking at resources people can look into, checking out information from Genesis Farm, the ability to get some training in transition, permaculture, local currency, some organizations they might be able to create and get involved with that I'll go back and share with the listeners of the show. Before I do that, however, is there anything else that you guys would like to add to this conversation?
Yeah, I would.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, there's, as the one author of Bringing Nature Home wrote, you know, and said on the interview with Scott Lamar. There's 42 million acres of lawn, in this country. And if people just take a look at that, look at their lawn and say, well, what is it doing? What is it feeding? It's making me get out there and cut it every week, you know, and I'm not getting any pleasure out of it necessarily, except it's well manicured and it's keeping me out of the purview of some sort of gated community association evil eye. But maybe I might be able to take my lawn and grow $500 worth of food in the permaculture style, and I can take that $500 and use it towards something else and to help myself be, so, you know, more sustainable and healthy. And I think that's a very simple place to start.
And I just I just want to let the listeners know that the book that Nathan mentioned is Bringing Nature Home by Dr. Douglas Tallamy. And for anybody who follows the show on Facebook, I included a link to his interview just a couple days ago, and you can find it there, and I'll also post it in the show notes. I apologize, Susan, you started to say?
It's okay. I just wanted to add that I like transition and permaculture because it does give people an alternative to their current lifestyle. And as this economic system collapses, we can use what our friend Gary Smith calls the cultural compost to recreate a new culture with the compost of the old one.
Cultural compost.
Yeah.
We'll have to see what happens as it all kind of rots and becomes something new, eh?
That's right.
So, well, I'd like to thank you both for taking this time out of your schedules to join me for this interview and let us into the world of Transition Harrisburg and the transition movement as a whole and the challenges that you face and the hope that you find in it. Thank you both very much for your time.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
And the fact that you're even doing this is also a tribute to you as a person that we are very proud of, and say, just keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Yep.
Bye. Thank you for joining me for another interview. If you have comments or questions about this or any other episode, go to thepermaculturepodcast.com and leave a message or send me an email. That address is show@thepermaculturepodcast.com. Until the next time, take care of yourself, the earth, and each other.